Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of Cubs checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Member FDIC.
Welcome into the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. I'm Luke Stuckmeyer alongside David Kaplan. Our special guest today is a former Cub who is also a natural on MLB Network now. He is Mark DeRosa. D-Ro, how you doing? How was your Thanksgiving?
My Thanksgiving was awesome. How you guys doing as well? I actually went up to New Jersey and spent Thanksgiving with my mom and my family up in northern New Jersey. So just got back a couple days ago, kids back in school, and grinding it out as a dad.
So, D-Ro, let's talk about the Chicago Cubs as they look into this winter. They're coming off, you know, around here people feel like they had this awful season, yet you look up and you go, well, they won 95 games and led the division most of the season, lost it in that game 163. From your seat and you look at the Cubs, what do you see?
I see a team that broke a 108-year curse. That's what I see. I also see a team that maybe the roster kind of so many options for Joe Maddon, maybe it doesn't all blend. That being said, there's a lot of different ways you can go, but they are a super talented team. And I think for me, last year when I watched the Chicago Cubs play, one, no Yu Darvish. Not that you're banking on him to be John Lester or an ace, but you're banking on innings and quality innings, and you didn't get that until you acquired Cole Hamels. And two, you never saw 100% full-strength Chris Bryant. And that kind of exposed a lot of young at-bats. That exposed a lot of lineup flaws that Joe tried to cover up. So, as for me, I don't like to panic. When I look at their roster, are there moves that I think would help them or that they could make? Yes. But I'd also like to see a reemergence of the former Rookie of the Year and former MVP, and Matt May Idol and Chris Bryant, instead of reading about him potentially being on the block. I'd love to see him right in that two-hole again, playing third base or left field or wherever you want to put him on a given day, and him hammering 35 homers and driving in 100 runs. And then I'd like to stick Yu Darvish, a healthy Yu Darvish, in that rotation to go along with Lester and Quintana and Hendricks and Cole Hamels. Maybe add a bullpen piece to go along with hopefully a healthy Brandon Morrow and a Pedro Strop. And I don't see anything wrong with showing up to spring training in that fashion.
When you signed with the Cubs in November of 06, you were talking about the options that Joe Maddon had. You came here thinking everyday second baseman. It turned out you were so valuable because you could play literally all over the field. I think pitcher and catcher and maybe left field, center field were the only ones you didn't play here in Chicago. Do you respect the way some of these new Cubs are able to play all over the field, similar to the way you were, but does it make it more difficult as a player when there are that many options for you when you come to the ballpark every day?
You know what helped me, Cap, and what people, in my situation, I didn't play another position in the minor leagues except shortstop. I was drafted as a shortstop, and I didn't play another inning besides shortstop until the emergence of Rafael Furcal. And it was either go back to AAA and play shortstop, and who wants to do that, or start bouncing around. But what helped me is my roots were laid in the middle infield. So going to third wasn't as difficult. Going to the outfield, nothing I was going to play was going to be as demanding as playing shortstop on an everyday basis. So I felt like I was kind of ahead of the curve. I think sometimes in this day and age of, oh, we're going to be shifting anyway, we can just kind of stick guys wherever we want. I think you lose sight of, A, making a player comfortable, because for me, yeah, I would, if Lou said to me, D-Row, I need you to play right field, yep, aye, sir, going out there. But I didn't necessarily feel 100% comfortable in right field. I can go back to Carlos Zambrano's no-hitter in Miller Park, where I was standing in right field going, please don't screw this up for Big Z, because it's not like I'm out there every day. So the moving parts for me is a good thing, but the expectation that you're going to get quality defense, or the assumption that the guy feels comfortable in every spot, I think is a falsehood. So I don't know, after this year watching Ian Happ play, I don't even know where he feels comfortable or what his position could be. Another thing for me that, and I really do believe the reason I bounced around a lot in Chicago, besides the injuries, was Lou didn't 100% trust me turning a double play. And again, in today's game, with the slide rules being adjusted the way they are, I think general managers and managers take that skill for granted. Like, hey, we could stick almost anybody at second base, and because of shifts, there's going to be different guys turning double plays. But in October, when the chips are on the line, I want Javi Baez turning a double play for me. I want to know, and your pitching staff wants to know, that those walls are getting turned. So I was always cognizant of playing the different positions, handicapping myself in those positions, and kind of trying to put myself in successful positions to kind of hide some shortcomings at moving around. So that, I love the value of it, but you look at a guy like Ben Zobrist, where's his best position? I don't know. He's a great hitter. But does the pitching staff love him turning a double play with the game on the line? I don't know that answer. Or would Ian Happ be better? Again, don't know that answer. I haven't seen him play enough. I know Javi Baez can certainly go over and do that, but with the likes of Addison Russell potentially never putting a uniform on again for the Cubs, got to believe Javi's going to short. So I think it's easy to assume that the value of moving guys around necessarily makes you a quality team.
So I was talking to a former major league manager the other day, and we were talking about the Cubs, and he said, I think that Joe Maddon's biggest problem is there's too much talent on that roster and there's too much redundancy where, well, I can't let D-Row sit. I got to play him when I really should have – that guy's playing shortstop 150 times a year, and Mark's going to play this position. And when I can get my bench guys in, I will. But he said Joe feels like he's got so much, they all got to play, and it ends up backfiring. Do you agree with that?
It would be hard for me to knock anything that Joe Maddon's done. Again, I think, not to deviate from the question, but I think he was typecast to manage the Chicago Cubs. He helped them win a World Series. Are you going to agree with every move he made throughout the postseason? No. I thought there was moments where kind of some of the moves he made could have cost them. But we're not in the fight. We're not having to make those snap judgments. He's trying to keep a clubhouse happy, a young clubhouse, a vulnerable clubhouse happy. He doesn't have the likes of David Ross and Eric Kinski there to kind of be the manager within the clubhouse and kind of take the bullets away from what the players would or wouldn't say with regard to Joe. So, I would say he's guilty because he wants his boys to know that he's got their back and he's going to fight for them. So, I would disagree with that comment. But at the same time, you can fall into that trap where you feel like you owe certain people. Perfect example is Kyle Schwarber. What he did in 2016 was heroic. There wasn't a person in the MLB Network trailer that thought he was going to be able to come back, being out in the fall league, and give competitive at bats in a World Series. And he was unbelievable. What he was able to do in postseason moments, some of the monster home runs kind of are stamped in your brain if you're a Cubs fan in the postseason. But the bottom line is can he play left field for me on an everyday basis? Is he hurting me more than helping me? You flip over to right field and you look at Jason Hayward. Why is he in the lineup? Because he's certainly not getting $184 million of back there. He's in the lineup because every time he walks in the door, know exactly what you're getting. Gold glove defense, a guy who can beat you in a variety of different ways. His teammates love him. They fight for him. He fights for them. There's a rhyme and reason as to why Jason Hayward finds his name in the lineup every single day. Obviously, the contract plays a part in it. And why Kyle Schwarber finds himself in the lineup every day. But that, at the same time, Is he the answer in left field? Is that if we're going to have a young center fielder as well? And then, so we're handicapped potentially defensively in multiple positions.
So
second base, left field, don't totally know who's in center. If it's Almora, they haven't totally given him the keys yet.
No, they have some big decisions to make. Theo talked about not just looking at potential. It's about production now for the guys that are out there. You don't feel like Bryce Harper or Manny Machado is something that they should go that drastic this offseason. Maybe smaller moves you would expect out of the Cubs?
Yeah, I'm interested. I'm totally interested to see what Chris Bryant shows up. That interests me to no end because, you know, I read all the press clippings as well, and if you're a potential $200 million is turned down, and you hear the potential of his name being on the block. I mean, you hear it from everybody, but that's interesting to me. Not only what kind of haul you could get if you did entertain moving him, but the dynamic of what he means to that organization and that fan base. I want to see him show up. I want to see Yu Darvish show up. I want to see Brandon Morrow healthy. I want to see what they're going to do as far as Addison Russell's concerned. Are they just going to move Javi Baez over to shortstop every day? And does Ian Happ get an honest chance? Ian Happ, first swing of the year, he hit 7 homers in spring training, shows up opening day, goes bridge on the first at bat of the year, and I don't even think he played the next day.
I think you're correct. He did not play the next day.
I mean, how does that happen?
Yeah.
If I come off spring training and I hit 7 jacks, and then the first AB of the year I go off the facade at Marlins Park, and the next day I show up to the yard, I'm not in the lineup, like, whoa. As a young player, that's got to mess with you a little bit. Whether or not you knew that was coming, it still has to bother you a little bit.
We're going to take a quick break here on the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. We'll be right back.
Cubs authentic fans, the My Teams app by NBC Sports is your home for Cubs highlights, articles, and more. For the best Cubs coverage anytime, anywhere, download the My Teams app today.
Welcome back to the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust on NBC Sports Chicago. We are talking with former Cub Mark DeRosa.
Are you surprised from the seat you sit in? Joe Maddon said yesterday, I don't look at it as I'm a lame duck. I'm a free agent in a year. Are you surprised that they will go to spring training with changing pitching and hitting coaches back-to-back years and their World Series winning manager is twisting in the wind without an extension that he has asked for?
Am I surprised? No. I think in today's game, so many different ways of looking at the game and analyzing the game. I don't know if everything runs its course to a certain degree. I don't know the working relationship with Theo. I'm not surprised by it from what I've read. I've read the article on Chili Davis saying he had a tough time connecting with some of the younger players, the millennials, and all that. I think the players are the show. You've got to figure out a way to get your coaching staff to connect with them. And Joe does a great job of that. I just think over the years, I hate to go back to David Ross because he reminds me a lot of myself, and I hate to give him. I can't give him enough credit, but I don't want to give him so much credit. But at the same time, when you kind of have that leader in the clubhouse that holds everybody accountable, that can be that kind of muse to Joe Maddon, I think when that's gone, it affects a lot of things. It affects the way guys interact with the coaching staff. It affects the way guys question how Joe runs the lineups and the bullpens and everything. Kind of just a trickle-down effect. So it's interesting to me to know how the Cubs are going to show up, but I don't definitely look at it like some of the articles that I read. I got to believe a couple healthy guys, and this is completely different.
What about a leadoff hitter, D-Row? How important is that in a major league lineup? Are we overvaluing the leadoff hitter, or has the departure of Dexter Fowler a couple years ago changed the way completely top to bottom that Joe works that lineup? Is it more important or less important than we think?
You know, it's funny you ask me that because I was the biggest kind of I that was my one knock when they kept leading off Anthony Rizzo. Like it bugged me. It bugged me for him, for Anthony, and I didn't understand it. But when you really dive into the numbers, and you talked about this earlier, that the guy saying they have a lot of the same player, when you would look at their numbers on base percentages, slugging percentages, they were all kind of the same. So it was tough for Joe to really run out a lineup that kind of made sense analytically as far as, well, let me get my on-base percentage guys at the top of the order, and let me get my slugs in the middle and figure out a way to go right, left. He didn't really have that option. There's a lot of similar hitters. But the one guy who got on base a ton was Anthony Rizzo all the time. So I could understand why he did it. I didn't personally like it. I think it's more of a knock on the rest of the guys needing to step up. But I just think it's case by case now, the way teams view it, the way your lineup flows. The Houston Astros were the first team I asked A.J. Hinch, why George Springer in the leadoff call? He screams 4-5, run producer. And he said he's the most high-energy guy. He shows up ready to go. He can take you deep. I wanted a dynamic guy who could kind of set the tone for the entire lineup and just kind of wake the game up. You see that all happening a lot around the game now with Acuña and all these different guys leading off. So I can't say I hate it. I just don't think Anthony Rizzo fits that profile. So, you know, would you love case by case, would you love a guy like Javi Baez leading off? He's going to deal with some strikeouts, but then also I want him to be that wild horse that he was last year. So I think your lineup and your personnel dictate who you lead off.
Do you feel like people are forgetting about the Cubs when they think of the super elite teams? Obviously, Boston's the reigning champ. Houston, that you hear about the Dodgers, you hear about the Yankees after they get James Paxton. But you don't really hear people say, boy, the Cubs are one of the three or four or five best teams in baseball. And maybe it goes back to, we don't know what Chris Bryant's going to show up. We don't know what Yu Darvish is going to show up. Is Brandon Morrow going to be healthy, or are they going to go get another closer? But if those questions are all answered positively, this team's as good as any team in baseball, right?
Absolutely. I think, we fall in love with different guys in different teams every year. Last year, early on, it was the Yankees with Andujar and Gleyber Torres, and then the Braves were just a sexy watch with Acuña and Ozzy Albies. The Cubs hit the scene running in 16, and it was like, whose jersey do I buy in the team store? I mean, could have picked anybody. Could have picked Baez and Russell and Schwarber and Bryan. It didn't matter at the time. Now a lot of those guys have to become legit everyday big league players consistently, and that's kind of, you haven't seen some of them take that next step. You've seen others become elite stars. Baez is one for the ages. I mean, what he was able to do, he was probably the most fun watch. Just one player, watching one guy. I mean, I'm in love with Mike Trout, but who isn't? But if you want to watch a guy just play the game and do things that can't be taught, you watch Javi Baez. So he's obviously taking the next step. KB was damaged this year. Almora, again, he looks the part, but every time I think he's going to be the center fielder, he sits for a couple days. So I think totally no. Schwarber, you hear the knocks on him. So I think it's all like this year it'll be someone else. It'll be the next wave of great young player to help out a team, get him over the hump, and we'll fall in love with that guy until October.
D-Roll, thanks for your time. We really appreciate it. This was fun.
All right, Cap.
You're the man. Be good. We'll talk to you soon.
That's it for this edition of the Cubs Talk podcast presented by Wintrust. A big thanks to our guest, Mark DeRosa. We will be here at least twice a week, every week, with new podcasts on your Chicago Cubs.